Welcome to the 155 Election Podcast. Interviews with candidates running for mayor, city council, and school board trustee in Hamilton, Ontario. Episode 152. Jason Farr, you are running for re-election as Ward 2 city councilor. Welcome back to the 155 Podcast.
Thank you for having me and everyone else you're having. There's a lot this time around.
Firstly, tell us a little bit about yourself.
First and foremost, I'm a proud dad, a loving husband to a loving wife, Lisa, and my son, 17. I'm so proud, and you'll appreciate this, being from the same neighborhood as Soupy this year. He applied and got his first real job at one of our inner city parks and is doing phenomenally well. In fact, I think he even won a Soupy of the Week award in July. So yeah, I'm a dad. I'm obviously a three-term city councilor. Born and raised and still live an inner city guy, a positive, hardworking, results-driven counselor, I would suggest. Anybody who knows me knows that I love this city. I've always been hyper-local on the radio and on the television for more than 22 years, and I think I'm hyper-local as an elected official, too. Love the city, love downtown, and have spent my entire adult life giving back and serving the community in various capacities, notwithstanding politics. It's just been an absolute pleasure to be a Hamiltonian and spread the Hamilton gospel everywhere I go.
Why are you running?
It's similar to the answer. There's a few answers, but it's similar to the one we talked about with the 155 4 years ago, Joe. I want to maintain momentum. I mean, we've hit a bit of a lull, unfortunately, with the pandemic, but it's not exclusive to Hamilton. It is worldwide. That said, even during the pandemic, things were happening, and we continued to attract thousands of people to live in Ward 2, to invest in downtown over the years, and it needs to continue. We need to keep going with the jobs, with the unprecedented growth that we've seen. No one can argue that over the course of the last decade or more that, you know, the cranes, the buildings, the fancy cafes, and the arts and culture scene, it's unprecedented, and it has to continue. It really does more than ever now with the state of affairs economically worldwide and here at home. So we have to keep investing, and more than ever, that means, in my opinion, especially with the turnover we're going to see with council this year, Joe, a little bit of experience around the horseshoe, someone who has some proven results on the record, it'll be, I think, very helpful. So we have to govern smarter than ever, what with interest rates and inflation. And, you know, people getting dinged just about everywhere they turn, whether it's the grocery store or the gas bar. There are ways to mitigate that experience, if not eliminate in some areas, for the people of Ward 2 and the people of Hamilton at the local government level. And it's certainly something we should at least be cognizant of, that, you know, there's a lot of folks hurting out there. And so that's why I'm running. And, you know, I mean, you know, it wasn't long ago that the provincial Liberals came knocking, and I answered that call, and I really wanted to be part of that. And mostly, as I said at the time, and I continue to say, that was based on, you know, what can we do for the city of Hamilton? As a candidate, that's what I spoke to at the doors, and understanding municipal government is a creature of the province, and understanding that we haven't always had, we've had some great representation as MPPs over the years. And some of them are just stepping down now, but we also haven't had enough concentration on things like healthcare and housing, as an example. And so we need to focus on those things more provincially with our MPPs, with our provincial government. And so sort of the same reason there, you know, if you want to maintain the momentum and you understand that local government is in a very large part a product of provincial government, and we're at their whim in more than half the things we do, the same reasons there, you know, we are very much in an unprecedented time where experience and results, I think, are going to be very, very important. New folks around the horseshoe, absolutely. We've always had that. There's always been change elections, and certainly it won't hurt to have folks around the table as well, especially given the relationships that take time to mature, whether they're with private investors or city staff, that you can work collaboratively to get those things done and to make those smart moves and mitigate the dinging that's going on for all of our citizens.
Do you live in Ward 2, yes or no?
No, as you know.
Does it matter if one lives in the community one seeks to represent?
Yeah, sure, but also close. And certainly I'm in the ward next door. Everyone knows Ward 3. I was downtown living in my adult life at the beginnings for about a decade before that. inner city, as you know, Joe, my entire life here in Hamilton, whether it was, close to the Kiwanis Club on Ellis Ave, whether it was, you know, East Ave or Arthur Ave in Ward 3 or Robinson Street for many years in Ward 2, even in Ward 1 during the Mac era for Jason Farr, Thorndale and Whitney. So I've either lived in Ward 2 or I've had it surrounded, but I've spent a lifetime in the inner city. I mean, and there's a lot of similarities to the things that go on in the neighborhood that I'm in now and the neighborhood that I spend most of my time in, which is Ward 2. I watched firsthand a generation of stagnation in downtown, maybe more than a generation, and to have played a role in the ongoing renaissance. Well, you know, having lived a decade in the core helps, but always living in the inner city certainly was an important aspect to what I've done thus far and what I'll be doing in the future.
How have you contributed to your community and our city?
Politically, I would suggest some of the things that, you know, this is a great question for all the candidates, but I'm quite proud at, you know, the tangibles, the downtown secondary plan, which was 10 years in the making, which is this city's most inclusive, most progressive planning tool that dictates how we plan in the downtown growth district. Its inclusivity hopefully sets a standard for all the other secondary plans to come. The setting sail secondary plan, that was about 20 years in the making, you know, dictating everything from Cannon on northward and the waterfront and all of those investments. I've contributed to the community and to our city in sustainable ways, and sort of generally that's the mandate. So you see a lot of safer infrastructure over the course of the last 12 years, the three terms on council. You see safer street designs. You see protected bike lanes. First, you saw more bike lanes. In fact, I think it was about 24 kilometers at one point and rising. And you know, with all of that sustainable, safe infrastructure, you get things like, you know, safer atmospheres for pedestrians, speed reductions because we two-wayed Bold or Duke Street or created parking protected cycling lanes on Charlton and Herkimer by way of public engagement, I might add, through two neighborhood associations. Great idea there. Things like that. And then when new streets are being built, which has been a big focus this past term, you see what's gone on in Central Neighborhood in the North End and coming up. Hopefully we'll have Corktown more in the North End and others where you don't just repave a road and fix the infrastructure, which you have to get at in older parts of the city. You got to go after the pipes and replace them too. But you also see things like bump outs and rain gardens and all of that stuff that, you know, I've proudly been behind and working with some very smart people who have advocated both in the community, but also on our city staff. West Harbor, $140 million more to come. Just walking through there with Lisa yesterday afternoon, talking to lots of people who are very, very impressed with, you know, Cops Pier. But, you know, you're starting to see all the other pier action come into play too. And certainly that's lots of time still before we actually see it come to fruition. But that is pretty much an unprecedented municipal government term after term of council investment that's maintained itself. And I should note, not one that's been easy as an elected official. There have been some councillors that look at that each and every year at budget time, particularly in the early years, who want to get a piece of that action for their own wards, which is understandable. So maintaining that investment, I'm quite proud of how I've contributed to the community there. The entertainment district, which we could talk about a little bit later if you want. I think it's in one of your questions, but you know, $155 million in savings over 30 years. $116 million private capital investments coming to places, our entertainment precinct or our facilities, where prior to privatizing the operations, you know, we were getting HECFI coming to council every year. I think the last year they asked for $11 million in operating, and now we're looking at figures where, you know, we've not mitigated, we've completely solved the problem, and we're bringing better entertainment in the near future. Better transit, lifetime of commitment to things like, you know, kids, whether it's the Skate the Dream as a counselor or my years as a Soupy, now it's my son, working with kids on the parks and collaborating and partnering with people that are making life easier, whether sending kids to a Camp Maple Leaf, as I did for years, doing stunts on the radio and the TV, and then parlaying some of those relationships and involvements with those community leaders that work with those less fortunate in the community as a counselor. Still do, always will, no matter where I happen to land. Leading the way in returning our parks and our public places back to the people, to the families, and to the children, particularly through the pandemic. It got completely out of hand, and it wasn't easy to maneuver over that issue. But certainly a part of that contribution to community in the city was to look at housing homeless, and we do it very, very well in Hamilton versus being the only city that was, you know, pretty much permitting encampments in all of our parks, and it became less and less inclusive and more exclusive to just one diverse group that didn't always, not all of them, but didn't always want to play by the rules. So I'm a big everyone counts or nobody counts guy. I always have been. I borrowed that from a West Coast novel years ago, and I just love the line, Harry Bosch was the detective. And I'm really proud that over many years, and it takes many years, we've not only redeveloped streets, but and we continue to, but just about all the parks. There's a whole bunch of new parks, but also redeveloped parks. And, you know, a lot of that done, and it takes time because you want to be fiscally responsible, you know, when you do it. There's a long list, but you're probably anxious to get to question five.
What are two of your priorities for Ward 2 and two of your priorities for Hamilton as a whole?
Ward priorities, community safety, more frontline policing, officers in uniform, on the roads, keeping parks open for everybody, keeping our streets safer. We're heading in that direction. I really appreciated taking over for Councillor, now MP Collins, on the Hamilton Police Service Board. We have a board that gets it. We have frontline officers that get it. And we have a growing call from the community to focus on community safety, whether it's, you know, traffic speeds, incomprehensible traffic fatalities, or just the perception and the feeling of safety by these thousands and thousands of new residents that have decided to make that investment to live downtown or who've been living here their entire lives. It's increasingly important. It's been very clear to me since I've been talking to more and more people every day in a candidate conversation. And the other would be fiscal responsibility. And as I mentioned before, families are getting dinged everywhere. They are getting dinged on gas. They are getting dinged on food, rent, everything, everywhere you look. And it is hardship. And it is a concern for a lot of people, a growing amount of people, whether they're seniors, working families, students. So experienced leadership is truly going to matter, and fiscal responsibility. There's no way around it. If we don't focus on that, if we're just throwing great idea after great idea against the wall and not being honest that all these great ideas come with a cost, we're going to make it even harder for people. We're sitting at the inflation's closing in on 8% right now. We've boasted for the last 12 years as a council that we've been among the lowest, if not lowest, in terms of tax increases on an annual basis. And we always say we keep it at inflation, roughly 2%, give or take. Well, if we still keep it at inflation, Joe, we're not going to be able to boast much longer. So there's got to be some creative thinking, and there's lots of ways we can at least mitigate the dinging from a municipal governance perspective. On city priorities, it's pretty much the same. Affordable housing across the city is going to be very, very key. And so we need to be creative. We need to continue to be creative there. We're seeing, you know, what we're seeing in McQuesten right now with the private public, a Jamesville private public work there, but others, you know, Kiwanis and Victoria Homes partnering, Indwell and Houston Baptist partnering. And a lot of it has to do with nurturing existing relationships with higher levels of government as well. I've always thought it was very, very important not to get on sometimes a bandwagon of pointing the finger at some party, whether it's the NDP, the Liberals, or the Conservatives, or the Greens, and say they're not doing enough. Or what have they done for us lately? Or they're not the majority government, they're a minority government, and they can't do anything for us. The reality is it's really important to nurture relationships along the way. I just got a call from Donna Skelly. I mean, here I ran in the last provincial election. I was unsuccessful, but I never thought for a minute that as if I were successful, that there isn't friends I've already made or people that I could already work with in moving Hamilton priorities along. And it was really nice just catching up with my old, you know, broadcast colleague, let alone council colleague. But those are the kinds of things you can't take for granted. We always love to be parochial, but the reality is we have to start thinking about everyone and trying to get all on the same page when it comes to affordable housing as a city priority. That's huge. And of course, community safety, that falls under both ward and city priorities as well. And I've already gone over that with you.
What are three skills you will bring to elected office that makes you the best choice to represent Ward 2 on Hamilton City Council?
Three skills, I would say most who follow along would see that I have a positive attitude, and sometimes that's difficult with the mean tweets and the, you know, some reports and perspectives. But, you know, I know what I signed up for 12 years ago. I know what I've signed up for now. People are frustrated, and oftentimes first finger is pointed at governors, whether municipal, provincial, or federal. Boy, you know, what a difference 6 months makes for a Trudeau as an example. But the reality is you have to take that in stride. You have to continue to have a positive family life and enjoy your life, because we only get one kick at this. And so maintaining positivity throughout, you know, the extracurricular side of things translates into the job. And the reality is the two are constantly overlapping. And so I keep a positive attitude 24/7. Experience is another one. And I've already touched on it. I don't need to beleaguer it, but that is a skill. Over time, it is something, if you're working hard, you get better at. And experience really pays off, just as it does in sports or any other job you might be in. The longer you're there, if you're working hard at it and you have a positive attitude and you enjoy it, you're going to get better at it, unless you rest on your laurels or you think you're better than everybody else. And proven results is the third skill. I mean, throughout this campaign at jasonfarr.ca, there'll be statistical evidence of stuff we have done together. A lot of it driven from public engagement, a lot of it over many, many years, some of it more recently. But it's a really wonderful opportunity. I just wrote this in the breezes, to be tested like this after 4 years, each and every time you run, because folks are running against you and they're obviously not going to focus on, you know, $140 million investment in the waterfront or cranes like we've never seen before in the downtown, or the sustainable stuff like the bike lanes and bump outs and smart street designs like I talked about yesterday. But all that stuff's documented, and it's stuff that I get to share. So positive attitude, experience, and proven results.
The following questions relate to honesty and transparency. If reelected, you will be dealing with confidential matters and deciding on what remains confidential and what the public sees. This term of council, we saw the Coots Paradise matter come before council and a decision of council to keep it confidential, citing legal reasons. An interesting thing with the Municipal Act that many people may not realize is that the majority of council decides what is confidential, and no individual councillor can release confidential information. With all of this in mind, what principles and advice help you determine what information should be confidential and what information should be made public?
Well, you already hit on the Municipal Act. Obviously, if the Municipal Act permits, that's a guiding document for us on confidentiality. And part of the reason for it, in fact, one of the biggest reasons for it is you want to protect the taxpayer. So, you know, if we're dealing with contractual matters, if we're dealing with real estate acquisitions or matters, if we're dealing with staff, human resources, personnel matters, you go in camera, right? I mean, you go in camera to the point where you don't need to anymore, in whole or in part. Most of the time, it's in part what we go in closed session for, and not in whole. But it's definitely a big piece for, I think, all of us, that folks understand we do this because the Municipal Act dictates this, and protecting the taxpayers is what we should do. You know, are we getting the best advice all the time? Absolutely not. No municipality is. No government is. I mean, we have 8,000 staffers, and we have a lot of staffers in the management side of things that will farm out on more specific issues. And you mentioned Shadoke, right? Legal expertise and legal governance from outside. And, you know, we're advised not only by our internal staff, but external staff as well. And the advice isn't always super duper. It isn't 100% wrong, but there's sometimes, not even close to all the time, but there are occasions where that advice is to remain in closed session or confidential is probably not the greatest advice. But some people who offer advice to we politicians like to err on the side of caution, like to be extra careful when it comes to protecting the taxpayers. And I think, being a glass half full guy, in a lot of the cases, that's what's occurred. When you look at Shadoke, and, you know, ultimately that confidential document initially was leaked. And so that wasn't an act of protecting taxpayers. The potential there could have been catastrophic in terms of what it meant to our taxpayers. It ultimately, I don't think was, but you know, there's still, that's yet to be determined. There's still folks that are going to be chiming in on what the city of Hamilton has to do still. And, you know, the person at that time, outside legal and legal, those people are long gone. We have a whole new legal front person and have had since, Public Works, same, new GM. And we are, every staff person who is in a management position and whomever they may contract out to has their own set of skills and advises, usually consistently, but on occasion, that advice might vary from the person who may have advised on the same topic a year ago.
The Red Hill Inquiry will issue its report early in the next term of council. The revelations regarding how City Hall ignored problems on the expressway and the toxic culture at City Hall, which silenced good people, are shocking. How do you plan to review and consider the final inquiry report when the commission releases its findings and recommendations?
Yeah, that's another wait and see. I've been paying close attention to this one, though, and at this point, it's, if I were to be a betting man, I would predict that it's not going to be something that needs to be reviewed by just, you know, the Steel City here. This isn't a Hamilton exclusive finding or findings that we'll be privy to some months from now as a result of our investment locally and having a review of this stature. No stone left unturned with a commissionaire and quite obviously a budget that, you know, on the other side of this thing is irking some these days as it grows. Regardless, the commissionaire, I think, if I'm betting, and this is just my prediction at this point, and it's certainly not in a, I'm not in any position to influence by this prediction, but it's just if one were a keen observer of what's gone on so far, this is very likely to devise standards where there are none, where none exist at this point in Ontario today. It's constantly referenced, and any commissioner, in this case a former judge, is going to weigh findings against existing standards. And in this case, it's not applicable. There are no real standards that I can see, and therefore new ones will be the result, or part of the result anyway, of this review. And those are going to take effect, or that, you know, if the municipalities in the province agrees, across this province. So every municipality is going to be looking closely at the outcome of this extensive review.
The construction of the B-Line LRT will begin during this term of council. It will be the largest construction project in Hamilton's recent history. How do you plan to respond to construction challenges and opportunities?
Well, I say this, and sometimes in community meetings when I say it, it doesn't go over very well, but I say when people are complaining, deservedly so, that construction is upsetting the apple cart in their immediate vicinity, that it is a pain in the butt. I completely agree with them, but just think and focus on the end product. Some people that are dealing with, you know, the dust and the noise and the vibrations don't like to hear that. This is an extensive project. It's a massive, massive investment, and it's really, truly important. But it's still a construction project at the end of the day. And you know, some people that are maybe anti-LRT are spinning, oh, it's 5 years. Well, it's not 5 years altogether from Eastgate to McMaster University. It's coming in stages, and there'll be phases, and it won't be 5 years in any one spot. So it will be a pain in the butt. There's no doubt about it. And how do you plan to respond to construction challenges and opportunities? Well, the way we always do. If there is something that needs to be altered, if there are sessions of engagement that need to be had because there's some consistency in the concerns we're hearing, then that's stuff we do already, and that's stuff that we can do in the case of the LRT. The one difference with the LRT is, and as you know, there's been extensive engagement so far. Are there tweaks coming? Absolutely. But as it relates to Ward 2, a lot of the construction, in fact, almost all of it, is affecting ground retail. And so working with the businesses is something that we started many, many years ago. And, you know, we'll carry on from where those conversations, and of course, when I say businesses, a lot of it about BIAs as well, we'll keep going and nurturing those relationships as well. No one has ever said no from the LRT office or the city when the BIAs have come calling and asked, these kinds of questions and other questions related to LRT construction, and no one will stop answering that call when the call comes.
Before we turn to land use planning, let's have a lighter question. What is something interesting or unique within Ward 2 that you believe the rest of Hamilton should know about?
I'll say the waterfront. Just walking there yesterday with Lisa, it's born out of some very innovative thinking over many, many years and a whole lot of, I would say, well-documented public engagement that helped put us in the position we're in right now, where we're seeing the results of this $140 million investment, and there's still so much more to come. And like innovative, like that design competition for Cops Pier, and we were spending some time on there talking to folks yesterday, 30 meters wide, lots of children's play areas, a sandy beach, all of that stuff. But then you think of what's beyond it and what's coming to the waterfront and all the stuff you can learn about the waterfront for people who may not know, as to your question, you know, the Habitat for Humanity and the 70 units of affordable living that they're going to bring to about 1,500 units, prime real estate, and what it all means. And it's like basically building a little mini city for everyone to enjoy and to be proud of in the city. And so that's something I would want everyone to see and to know about.
City Council decides land use planning and zoning. It decides where housing and businesses are located and the types of housing and businesses which are permitted in locations. Ward 2 zoning includes the Downtown Secondary Plan, the West Harbor Secondary Plan, better known as Setting Sail, LRT corridor zoning, and some pockets of the old City of Hamilton residential zoning. There are two high-level and one site-specific question regarding this topic. Ontario's provincial policy statement, Ontario's de facto planning law, designates a minimum 500-meter radius surrounding GO stations and LRT stops as major transit station areas. In effect, most of Ward 2 is located within a MTSA. Development will occur. The question is where and if it is approved by council or the Ontario Land Tribunal. What is your land use planning vision and how will you achieve it?
In your preamble, you mention it. We have it pretty good here in Ward 2 because we started the processes on things like what you've mentioned, the Downtown Secondary Plan in play, Setting Sail pretty much in play, transit-oriented corridors in play, understanding and appreciating what it means, the MTSA, major transit station areas, all of that stuff, you know, approvals in place, all of it steeped in inclusivity, growth and development and investments are mostly a private function, as most people know. So the plan would be to nurture and promote that investment with the tools that are already in the toolbox. What's already in the books is still an attraction, quite obviously. You see a lot of things being built, a lot of high-rises being built, and mid-rises and adaptive reuse of heritage structures and all of that. And all are following, or trying to at least follow for the most part, those policies that we've put in place with our land use planning. And in terms of vision, it's a shared vision, and it's been years in the making, to quote Hamilton's Arkells. The Downtown Secondary Plan was about 10 years. The Setting Sail Secondary Plan got to be a couple of decades. Transit-oriented corridor management plan, probably in my first, maybe the start of the second term. So all of those in place. And so the focus now is to just be consistent with it, but also understanding that each parcel has its own story and tweaks to these plans have merit in many cases, not all cases, but in some cases. So you got to keep an open mind. Part of keeping an open mind as it relates to what has to be the priority still in the core, which is growth and development, economic development, is to make sure we get along and promote to those people willing to make those hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars being invested in more to come. And so you got to, you know, make sure folks understand and appreciate all of the time, the public engagement that has gone on and went into those plans and maintained them in terms of land use planning. I hope I answered your question. My vision is to be consistent in short, Joey, to the plans that took years to put into play that are in play now.
How will you balance the need to approve new housing, including rental housing such as secondary dwelling units, while responding to concerns regarding development?
Not to sound boastful, but I want to suggest to you at this time that that's probably been my expertise. It's been a huge challenge initially, and it takes a great deal of work. There's a whole lot of opinions out there. When new change comes to your neighborhood, you'd want to be listened to. I'd want to be listened to. And so you got to go into it thinking, okay, there's change coming to this neighborhood and people are going to want to be heard. But here's the trick. Not all those people are going to be saying the same thing. It definitely varies. I'll give you an example. We were discussing twice in May and then prior to May with approximately 15 Eastside Corktown residents about a pitch that's coming to Hunter Street at between Ferguson and Liberty Street on the south side. A very, very engaged residents, most of them on the same page in terms of what was in their view, and I completely agree and understand with it, was overdevelopment of a site that's a bit of a postage stamp, a bit of a long postage stamp. But they're in that room with 50. Let's put it this way. This development was the kind of development that if you're going to see consensus in the room, this is the one that you're probably going to come the closest to seeing consensus with. But there's still folks who A, support the thing, B, have different ideas on, you know, ingress, egress, landscaping, design type things, parking. And so you just basically have to create those opportunities to allow that conversation to take place. And preferably, and in this case, it did occur, get them all together, get everyone together and have that open conversation. Big trick to that, and this is where I just tongue in cheek say this may be my greatest expertise, is you got to guide the meeting. You have to keep things under control. Because understandably, if you understand human nature, people aren't always subject to change with big smile on their face. And so you have to take that into account. But you also have to keep things moving along for everyone because they all want to get their voices heard, you know, and do what you say you're going to do in terms of the agenda of the meeting. If it's going to be a Q&A, then it's a Q&A. If it's going to be a Q&A followed by a charrette, then it's a Q&A followed by a charrette. Because in the end of things, you're going to be following up with everybody. Eventually, you're going to be following up with everybody. And you want to be able to say, hey, I invited you to do ABC. You came in big numbers. You did ABC. And here's the, you know, summation of what I heard. Is this right? What I'm hearing? And so that kind of thing is what you have to do to balance the need to approve the new housing and include, like we need to do in Hamilton and across the world, our rental housing stock, including secondary dwelling units or something like the project I'm speaking to now. You need to be able to engage, and that's the key. And you need to make people understand that all through this, there's going to be compromise. There's got to be compromise, but that there's ways in which you can share with people where at least you're coming from. They still might not all agree, but you can at least through these public engagement sessions say that, look, this is where this is coming from. This was born out of a strategy in Colombia, or this was born out of a secondary plan session from 2012.
Hamilton City Council signed an agreement with a group of developers to transact the City of Hamilton's downtown properties to them. The deal is secret, council having declared the deal confidential. Additionally, council signed a deal for the Barton Tiffany lands. There is a missing piece to the deals, the Sir John A. McDonald Secondary School site. What is your vision for this school board-owned property, and how will you implement that vision?
Okay, well, first I would say that 90% of these deals are very much public. So, you know, we know that it's $116 million in capital rentals for the entertainment precinct, as an example, the Hoop Egg referenced, or $155 million in savings of expenditures that would have been borne on the taxpayers that are now going to be privately invested. The RFP process, a lot of this was the result of public meetings that we had, official meetings of council. The lots, as an example, with Hoop Egg that we've recognized as well. That's all very public, but, you know, there's still a master agreement that's not complete. Once complete, what is being paid to get that $155 million in savings of expenditures, the $116 million in capital rentals, that'll be public. I'm going to put all that stuff together in a neat little package as well. And if anybody wants to email far4ward2@gmail.com, I can give you the details on that. As for Sir John A. McDonald Secondary School, obviously it's still board property. It'd be great to see that property get some sort of attention and be incorporated in some way in an inclusive manner to the entertainment district, because essentially the entertainment district is like a half ring around First Ontario Center, so Bay and York. But the reality is it's going to be up to the school board. They've had some admirable pitches a couple of times now to the province to do the community hubs and bring the Y there and different ideas. That's great. I'm at the point now where I'm encouraging them to get moving on Sir John A. McDonald, but ultimately it is in the school board's hand. And my guess is for those contending for the Ward 2 trustee position, it'll probably be a hot topic this campaign.
Road safety is a significant issue across Hamilton, including in Ward 2. What is your overall plan to address road safety? Please provide three detailed specifics of your plan.
Okay, I'll give you three, and I'll just open with, you know, keep doing what I've done. I will admit, as I have had in the past, that a lot of road safety is the direct result of folks coming to me, especially in the early days. It was a welcome conversation. I learned a lot about myself. I've learned a lot about what's important to people and did a lot of studying up on some of the things they said, whether it was, you know, looking at parking protected bike lanes that originated out of Montreal that was shared by a local group of representatives from Kirkendall and from the Durand Neighborhood Association. We ended up doing that, but it was totally born out of engagement and having City Hall packed to the rafters for things like the Bay Street Bike Lane public engagement sessions, or PICs, PICs as we call them, or even the Duke and Bold transformations that has greatly mitigated the cut-through scenes there in the heart of Durand. The 2,000 plus, I think it was 2,000 or was it 20,000 for the bidirectional Cannon bicycle lane. I don't know if you remember that, but that was some time ago. But that petition helped spur that project along. And in fact, it took us to the point of, at one point, and I think we may still be on the east side anyway of North America, the longest protected dual lane bike lane. So what I would say, one, more protected bicycle infrastructure for sure. It's what's being desired. We all know that the more you protect the bike lanes, the more people are going to get on their bikes and use those bike lanes. The more people that get on their bikes and use their bike lanes, the better it is for a safer environment on the sidewalk, the better it is for the environment, the better it is for a lot of things, personal health and all of that. Sustainable improvements, when you take a walk through a neighborhood, when you sustainably improve a road, look at the central neighborhood and all the work that we did there, and you see bump outs, we've got a rain garden coming at McNabb and Barton, those kinds of things, urban braille, you're sustainably making improvements to roads and sidewalks and not just, you know, shave and paving. You know, we even have now plans like the pedestrian mobility plan with the city of Hamilton under our transportation master plan and all of those things where we are actually focused more on pedestrians now first and then out from there. So I would say more sustainable improvements. And three, I would say more uniform police for public safety and road safety specifically to your question. You know, we have about roughly 20 police officers working in traffic safety where 5 years ago we had none. We used to have them all the time, traffic safety police officers, but, you know, police budgets are challenges and things changed and got altered. But Hamilton Police Services and the boards of past and present are answering a public call to have more visibility from police. And boy, are they answering in terms of traffic safety. So I would definitely suggest that it's also because we support, and it's not always easy. It is a big chunk of our annualized municipal budget. But we support those police budgets for the most part, ask a lot of tough questions, understand that a lot of the police budget is the result of arbitration and whatever Milton gets, we get, that kind of stuff. But I would not, I know we have a candidate here in Ward 2 that's endorsing a $35 million cut to the police budget, and that reduces key players in policing and doesn't really address public safety. It goes in the wrong direction. As much as it's difficult to say out loud for some people that we need more cops, I say it quite proudly because that answers the call and it really answers your question.
Turning to governance and expertise, let's use the idea that it takes 10,000 hours to master a skill or trait and apply it to being a municipal councillor. One cannot be an expert in all matters which come before council for a decision. How will you gain the necessary learning to be able to make informed decisions? What reading do you do? What professional development will you look for? And what types of people will you seek advice from?
Here again, I'd say experience matters. I'd say my hours are long past the 10,000 at this point. I think you could probably safely agree with that. But just keep on keeping on in terms of that's what my campaign is about. Experience is really going to matter around that horseshoe. We know for sure at least 7 new members, maybe 8. And so you're hitting a key component of the campaign, and there are 8,000 city staff, and from frontliners to middle management to consultants that work regularly with the city to general managers and the city manager, those are the folks that you talk to regularly, that you develop relationships with, and they help you make that informed decision. But it's all those other things based on your own personal experience, mostly, that help make those informed decisions as well. In terms of reading, a lot of it is online now, to be honest with you. A lot of it is shared with me, different plans from different cities. that is shared with me by the constituency, which is always, I'm always grateful. I read a lot of Twitter, actually, but I don't respond. And some really great ideas there, but you get a sense on what's happening in terms of, you know, attachments that are sent along on the things like we've already talked about here today. And I've always been one, the professional development comes with the time. And if you're dedicated and you work hard, you will professionally develop it. First thing I thought of, though, when you said, what reading do you do? The first book that I seriously ever read as a very young man, as an adult, but that piqued my interest in community service that I've been involved with since being a very young man was Boom Bust Echo, where the author was Dr. Kay Foote was telling folks, this is the way it's going to be in 25 years with the aging population. There was going to be a boom. They're going to have all the money. And these are the people we have to adhere to and listen to in terms of, you know, they have the money. So they're going to be making all the investments and we have to respect them for the lives they lived and the investments they're making. We're certainly near the end of that period right now, or somewhere in the middle to the end. And it was a book that actually taught me to understand that it's not just economics, it's socioeconomics. And socioeconomics are crucial, particularly in a place like Ward 2, where you got everything from any diversity that you can think of, any income level that you can think of, and everything in between. And it's all important. And certainly when we are trying to be educated with the decisions we make around the council table, it isn't just about rubber stamping staff reports. It's about your own personal growth over the years, what you've learned and embedded in your fabric in terms of the way you want to govern, but also what you've learned from those experts, whether it's Dr. K. Foote or somebody's attachment on a tweet. And the whole time I was answering this question, Joe, I was trying to think, somebody sent me another good one today that is relevant. I just didn't have time to read it in full yet. So best not to give it a plug until I do.
What are two changes you will propose to improve city services?
Well, we can't keep shoveling money at everything or think that that's the solution or put it on the table and spend hours and hours debating and whittling down. We are going to have to change the way we think about money. I've mentioned it a few times. We need to be fiscally responsible now more than ever. It is just not a strong option. So I'd get back to getting our reporting mechanisms updated and be smart about, you know, what we're hearing and seeing, not only as a city staff, but from our folks out there. And staff accountability. There are some amazing people working for the municipality. We're trying to get more amazing people, but it's an employees environment out there across Ontario right now, probably across Canada. But we have had some challenges in the past. We've got a great general manager or city manager and general managers that are constantly working. And when I say, you know, we've been working on it, we've been working on it for about a decade. And we want to meet those challenges, but staff accountability and ultimately that's council accountability is going to be crucial. So I think we're in a good spot. We have some new GMs, as I mentioned earlier, new public works, general manager, emergency community services, very dedicated people with tons of experience, and they don't carry any baggage, really. They come into these jobs with their fresh ideas from, you know, their Boom Bust Echo books that they've read. And public safety is, again, something people like these directors and new general managers are going to have to stay focused on. So on the two changes that I would propose to improve city services, get back to basics and a reporting system on getting the job done that's efficient. That means more stuff will get done. I support the 311 as an example. And then staff accountability, that helps as well for efficiencies. And so there are ways we can help mitigate the ding I was talking about earlier, where we're feeling it with food prices and gas prices and rent and everything else, and still step up to these two challenges. There's others, quite obviously, but it's feasible. It helps knowing the bureaucracy, I'll tell you that.
What are two changes you will propose to improve quality of life in Hamilton?
Well, you got to continue to strive for more jobs, more homes. The growth of the core is so essential. It is the heartbeat of Hamilton. People get very, very proud that are from here when they see that growth, because they lived through a generation or more of stagnation, even decline in the downtown. And then it also is a testament to those who are making the investment that have come, some 6,000 in recent years, to Ward 2. That's a big step. And they want to see that continue too. They want to know that the investment that they made was the right investment, and that the things that are happening, whether it's all the stuff we've talked about, I didn't go down the list, but, you know, the sustainable growth, the new hires, the focus on public safety, they see all of this stuff. And I think it's important to pay homage to the fact that they've uprooted and made this investment and come to this wonderful city and particularly this wonderful downtown, because they're seeing this. And it is, and we'll see during the campaign, we'll share the facts, but it is unprecedented what's going on with the jobs and the unit growth. It's fantastic, and it's inclusive. Also, embrace, nurture investment, more tax dollars for pressing needs versus wants, right? And continue to improve our parks and open spaces. They're so essential, and that's something we learned, obviously, during the pandemic, and we've come a long way, and I think people want us to continue. Central Park's going to be fantastic when it's done. The parks that are going to be part of the waterfront development. Eastwood is next in terms of community park. It's going to be fantastic, but people want to see the smart investments, the right investments that make the quality of life better.
It's 2026. The public record is writing a review of the four-year council term that is just ending. What three words do you hope we will use to describe your term on council, and what three words do you hope will describe council as a whole?
Personally, I'd love to see folks look back at 4 years and say, you know, JFAR went in and said, you know, it was important in 2022 that we have some experience around the horseshoe and that we have results-driven type management around the horseshoe. And so those two for sure, experienced, results. And the other thing I say, no matter what, you got to be a positive person. I'm like a human and lose it from time to time. But the reality is life is far too short. Focus on those things that matter. And if you really, really love your city, it's not about just saying it, it's showing it. So people describing me as a positive person in 4 years' time would be phenomenal. So experienced, results, positive. From a city standpoint, city council, if folks could look back and say, you know, we were a little worried there, but they were non-divisive, if that's one word, I believe it is. They did get results, so results I would carry over. And in terms of the third thing to look back on, I would say because they were non-divisive, that led to getting the results, we like them. Likeable would be the word.
So you weren't given this as a heads up before, but we're going to play back the answer you gave to that question in 2018, and I'd like to get your thoughts on how you feel you did.
My term, committed, imaginative, and kind. Council as a whole, hopefully unified, engaged, and there's that word, steadfast.
Yeah, well, I mean, the committed and imaginative goes without saying, right? I'm always going to be kind. And then council, engaged, clearly we did engage quite a bit. We, you know, Engage Hamilton is a great new web portal that every day gets more and more traction and action. Unified, well, maybe could have been more unified, but probably more unified than most councils across the province. And what was the last one? Effective?
Council, unified, engaged, and steadfast.
Oh, yes, steadfast. I think that was my big word for 2018, so I just wanted to slip it in there, Joe. They were steadfast. We were steadfast. We stayed focused for the most part. I mean, it was clearly almost impossible to stay completely focused during a worldwide pandemic. But if you want to focus on just the work we did with EOC, being in an emergency operations, unprecedented emergency operations environment, we kept our eye on the prize. We did exactly what Dr. Richardson suggested, which a lot of the times was her taking advice from higher orders, higher health units, save and except for, I guess, the mandate there at the end. That was about the only time I can remember where we got a little bit divisive, but we were focused on getting through it together. I think we did a good job. I'm hearing from folks that, you know, they felt comfortable with the way we continue, I guess, to handle the pandemic. But yeah, that's interesting. Thank you for playing that back.
Thank you. That's the end of the prepared questions you were sent in advance. Do you have any closing remarks that you wish to share?
I'll only say thanks. I am keeping busy. I'm looking forward to getting out there. It's going to be really important for folks that have been concerned to really, and I think you talked about this, and maybe we talked about it before we went on with the 155 here, Joe, but now more than ever, we talk all the time about getting out the vote and getting people engaged in local politics. It's been pretty, you know, dismal, the turnout, 25% to 35% or whatever. And it has to be greater because there's so much at stake. There's so much on the line. Municipal politics is frontline politics, and it really does matter. And there's a significance to that more so now than ever before. And the other thing I'm going to say is I really love campaigns. As you can tell, I think we went almost an hour here, and I'm sorry if I did, but I really do like it because it's an opportunity to focus on the facts and focus on the realities of what has occurred. And, you know, when you're going door to door and someone shares, hey, you know, I heard this or I heard that, I go, yeah, I know where you heard that, but here's the reality. And you can point in the direction that you need to point them to, or you could say, that's correct. That did happen. And I'm more than happy to explain myself to you. And I got all the time in the world to do that right now. So I kind of love getting on the front porches and the backyards and the driveways.
Lastly, how do people find out more about your platform and get in contact with you?
far4ward2@gmail.com. That's far, F-A-R-R, number four, ward, number two, @gmail.com, or jasonfarr.ca, like previous contests.
This has been episode 152 of The Public Records, the 155 podcast. Thank you to the Hamilton Public Library for the use of their makerspaces to record these podcasts. Thank you to the readers and listeners of The Public Record for your support. You can visit thepublicrecord.ca to get more City Hall coverage, sign up for my City Hall newsletter, and become a member of the Press Club to keep me covering Hamilton City Hall. Thank you.